I'll remember you in my life.
8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order and welcome. Good morning, everyone. We do have a quorum, so thank you so much. And so Representative Les Lagarde, we have the February 13th, 2019 minutes. Would you care to make a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les Lagarde moves the approval of the February 13th, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on those? Hearing none, call for the vote on those minutes. Approval, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. So, you know, if you notice, we're kind of taking days and under topics. So yesterday was kind of a day on individual tax cuts. Today is a day where we're going to be looking at tax benefits on retirements and pension plans and Social Security and so forth, and also looking at a bill that will deal with a additional deduction on seniors and the blind and moving those up too. So we're all kind of in one category. So there's three of the bills that we're going to be talking about, taxing Social Security benefits and looking at cuts to those taxes. So the first bill we have up is House File 1032. Representative Cleavorn is here. Please approach. And Representative Cleavorn, welcome to the committee. And Representative Becker Finn, would you like to move House File 1032?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves House File 1032 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Cleavorn also has an amendment. So, Representative Becker Finn, if you would care to move the A1 amendment.
I will move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. So thank you, Representative Cleavorn, to your bill.
Good morning, Chair Mark Wharton, members. I have a bill which would increase, this bill creates a Minnesota additional standard deduction for taxpayers who are blind and elderly. The additional deduction is for $2,150 for all taxpayers, regardless of their filing status. These amounts will also be indexed to inflation starting in tax year 2020. I ask for you to vote yes for this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions on the bill? And so, Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the author of the bill, you know, oftentimes whenever you're dealing with something specific like this, do you have a story or a reason why maybe this is moving forward? Or
Representative Cleavorn.
Mr. Chair, members, when I was out talking to members of my community, I found that our seniors, and especially those who are in the middle income brackets, are being hit hard by their incomes, which are stagnant and rising costs. And I felt that this was a good way that we could help our seniors across the state, not just in my community, to relieve some of the tax burden that they've been facing.
Representative Swedzinski? Any other Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cleavorn, how much would the taxpayer, you know, save by getting this subtraction?
Representative Cleavorn, and also members, I think in your packets, Mr. Williams has prepared, and I think Representative Erickson looks like you have that now, so there might be some numbers there, but I don't, Representative Cleavorn, can you answer that? Otherwise, we could have Mr. Williams also possibly answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, this average, which is always a difficult number to put out, the average deduction would be $67. But when you look at the numbers for the people who would actually be receiving the bulk of the benefit. Just one moment, I'll give you that number. When I looked at the number of people who would be filing returns in these categories, you would see that 207,000 of those returns would be benefit to those who make less than federal adjusted gross income of $100,000. If we add into those numbers, those returns of people who would be filing federally adjusted gross income, you would see that $250,000 of the return, 250,000 of those returns would be for people making less than $150,000. I would ask our fiscal analyst if they would please address the, they know the numbers better than I do, and while I could give them to you, I think it's best to defer to the experts. If you would be willing to share those numbers with Representative Erickson, I would be greatly appreciative.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, so the benefit to the taxpayer would sort of depend on how many of these additional standard deductions they're eligible for. So you can get up to four additional standard deductions depending on how many members of your household, how many spouses are age 65 or older and are blind. So if both spouses are age 65 and both spouses are blind, then they would get four additional standard deductions. Mm-hmm. I believe the bill increases the standard deduction by $500 for single taxpayers and by $800 for married taxpayers, because it brings all taxpayers up to $2,150. And under current federal law, it's actually a little bit less for married taxpayers. And so then the tax benefit to the taxpayer would depend on how many people in the household are over 65, how many people are blind, whether they're filing single or filing a joint return, and then finally, what their marginal tax rate is.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
But Mr. Williams, isn't there still a marriage penalty? I mean, I think I heard you say that. Isn't it less?
Oh. May I address that question, please?
Representative Cleburne.
That is why the standard deduction was raised regardless of filing status. If you were to be a married person and your spouse would die during the year, you would still be filing a married joint return, and you would have a lesser deduction. Mm-hmm. By raising the deduction equally for all taxpayers, regardless of the status, you would no longer have a deduction for your marital status.
Representative Erickson, though, you caught something there that is kind of unique. If your married spouse, as Representative Cleburne said, it was $1,300 of increased standard deduction per mm-hmm. spouse, where if you're head of household single, it was $1,650.
Mm-hmm.
And what Representative Cleburne's amendment did was bring them both up to $2,150. And Mr. Williams, have you got a reason why there was the difference like that, where the married spouse per spouse was $1,300 versus the $1,650? Any idea?
Mr. Chair, members, I think the explanation that I heard was that if you're over 65 or blind, then arguably it's an additional hardship to be single and to not have another spouse to sort of share the burden of household mm-hmm. Management. And I think that's the explanation that I've heard.
Representative Erickson. Anything?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for missing the amendment. I even voted for it, but I didn't read it. So I apologize for that. I'm still thinking about this. Thank you.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. In my research last night, I probably worked on this probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours reading these bills and going through them and trying to see just what exactly they did. And I saw some of the authors. So by design, Mr. Chairman, I had a very light breakfast thinking that there'd be some things in committee today, but I don't see anything on this first bill.
Mr. Chair, may I answer?
Representative Cleburne.
You had a light breakfast.
I do apologize. This is my first bill. I have not brought donuts. We were advised by leadership that this practice will not continue. So I was told that I was not to bring donuts to this meeting.
Well,
so
Mr.
I,
Chairman,
oh. Representative Davids.
Mr. Chair, since when do we listen to leadership?
Mr. Chair, may I address that?
Representative Davids, duly noted. Duly noted. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just another thought, kind of as we were chatting about this bill. you know, when you have a blanket, like talking about aged, obviously there's an easy measure to that. But when you're talking blind, you know, how do you calculate what is considered blind? Is it 50% sight loss? Is it blind in one eye? Is it, you know, I have a dad that's completely blind. So, like, how would you be able to claim that? Would you be an NFL referee? Or, I mean, what's the?
Oh.
There we go.
Representative Swedzinski. That's the first time I've had to call someone in order on that referee comment. So I don't, you know, we might have to get back unless, Mr. Williams, would you know what would qualify as a person being blind under this statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Swedzinski, so I think it's the federal law, and this is defined by reference to federal law, is that it's if your central visual acuity does not exceed 2/200 in the better eye with correcting lenses, or if the visual acuity is greater than 2/200 but is accompanied by limitation in the fields of vision such that the widest diameter of the visual field subtends an angle of no greater than 20 degrees.
That's right.
And you wonder how these statutes work sometimes, or how someone gets to that. So, but thank you for that question. It's good information to know. Any other questions from the members? Otherwise, I'm going to go to the audience. If there are anyone here that would like to testify for or against House File 1032 as amended. Seeing none, Representative Cleburne, any closing comments on House File 1032?
I would just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for allowing me to present my first bill in committee as a representative. And I would also ask you to please support the bill as it helps many of our middle-class families, our aged, and our blind. Thank you for consideration, and I ask for a yes vote.
Representative Cleburne, thank you so much. And Representative Becker-Finn renews her motion to lay over House File 1032 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill on the agenda. Now, we have three bills that will deal with the Social Security benefit subtraction. They're all in a little different scale. And before we go to these three bills, I also want to mention the members, you have in your packets a letter of support on all three bills from AARP. So we're going to move, first of all, to House File 883, Representative Cantrell. Oh, there he is. Would anyone care to move House File 883? Representative Lee?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee moves House File 883 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Representative Cantrell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. It's a pleasure to join you this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill, House File 883. So House File 883, basically it increases the subtraction for Social Security income and really follows the outline that was established in 2017. When there was that Social Security tax relief bill. I don't remember the House file on that right off the top of my head. So, members, I'm not sure if you have in your packets this information from the Department of Revenue kind of outlining how this bill changes the current law, but basically we have kind of three different situations in which individuals are going to be eligible for some type of increased subtraction. And so for married joint filers, the increase in subtraction is $300 up to $80,430 for adjusted gross income. That subtraction decreases by 20% of provisional income for every dollar there afterwards. Also, I don't know if anybody on the committee has this, but Mr. Williams put together kind of a breakdown of the amount of households that would be affected, amount of returns that would be affected in the average decrease in the taxes that they would have to pay. This bill is, in my kind of assessment, more of a framework with which I think that the committee can adjust as those conversations progress and as the committee sees fit. But it is quite scalable to whatever members of the committee see is being most beneficial to the folks, the retired folks in the income brackets that that is broken down in this bill. I want to say that when I was door knocking in my district, I talked to quite a few seniors, and I will say my district has a fairly high median household income, and I talked to quite a few folks in my district who do collect Social Security income and who are concerned about the impact that that the current Social Security income tax structure has on their overall bottom line. So that's why I'm bringing this bill forward, and I look forward to conversing with members of the committee about its substance and about where we go from here.
Thank you very much, Representative Cantrell. And I'm going to call on Mr. Williams because this is somewhat a complicated area of law. And back in 2017, there was a subtraction for Social Security benefits, and there's a number of levers that kind of are moved around. So, Mr. Williams, if you could give kind of a brief overview of what we're kind of talking about here when we're looking at subtractions for Social Security benefits.
Mr. Chair, members, to start with, a portion of Social Security is not taxable federally, so the amount that's exempted federally is, as a starting point, also exempted at the state level. The amount that's exempted from tax federally depends on your provisional income, which I can define if someone is interested in that, but it's also kind of technical. So, but it's a measure of income that essentially takes away certain deductions from adjusted gross income, adds back, takes away Social Security, and then adds back half of Social Security, and then adds back tax-exempt interest. And so depending on how much of that provisional income that you have, either 100%, 50%, or 15% of your Social Security benefits are not taxable federally. So after sort of taking that federal exemption in calculating federal taxable income, Minnesota allows a separate state subtraction that was enacted in 2017. That subtraction, the amount of it you can take just equals your Social Security benefits up to a maximum. So if you look at your bill summary in front of you, for tax year 2019, for married joint filers, it's about $4,700. So you could subtract $4,700 of any remaining taxed benefits at the federal level at the state level. That subtraction is phased out on provisional income. So the phase out begins at $8,430. And it's phased out dollar for dollar by provisional income. And that $8,430 number is for married couples filing joint returns.
Okay, cool. Mr. Williams, yeah, what's that income amount?
Mr. Chair, $80,430 is correct, yes. Yeah.
Very good. So I think it's important, you know, as Representative Cantrell mentioned, we do have a revenue estimate just to get an idea of the scales on these bills. And so this one, just looking at a fiscal year 2021 cost, is $4.1 million. So any – Representative McDonald, did you have –
I'm
sorry. Very good. Any – Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Williams because I want to follow up on the fact you said there could be four different tax provisions that one could qualify for. So these senior citizens, if they're blind and over 65, could qualify for the Claiborne and this one? Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the four number I was referring to is the number of additional standard deduction amounts, that the maximum number that a household could claim. So that's just for the additional standard deduction. So if both spouses were married, were over 65, and were blind, they would get four additional standard deduction amounts. So under current law, married people get $1,300 in additional standard deduction. So they'd get four times that, which is $5,200, I guess, if both were married and if they were both over 65 and both were blind. That is sort of separate policy and sort of doesn't interact with the Social Security issue.
Oh, thank you. That's what I wanted to know, the interaction. Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Yep. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just sort of looking ahead and see that Representative Juergens has a bill, and his exempts all of the Social Security income tax, which would be $791 million in the next biennium of a reduction, and yours is a little over seven million, which is 1/10, or not even one. Yeah, it's like 1%. And just wondering, you know, of the whole scale, you chose like 1% more versus the whole thing. And what was your thought? Because I know you heard that at the doors, and we all heard it at the doors. Everybody really liked the income tax reduction.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Davids. That was something that was very popular at the door. So I was just curious. So, you know, if you can go from 1% to 100%, and you chose 1%, I'm just curious how you landed there.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. So this is a starting point, right? So where I'm coming from is, after hearing from people in my district about, you know, something needs to be done, I was thinking, you know, this is really a bill where, like I said, members of the committee can determine what is a fiscally responsible, fiscally or financially and economically solvent approach to further relieving that tax burden that seniors in our state are experiencing. And if members of the committee determine that 100% is the way to go, then I defer to your wisdom on that. This is a place to start. 1% is something, but it's not the overall end picture. So that's what I would say, Representative O'Neill. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I've tried to do as chair is, just like yesterday, where we had different scales on bills, and it's because, you know, we're going to have a limited amount of dollars in the end that we're going to be able to have as a target in tax committee. And so, you know, if we could do all things to, you know, for everyone, certainly, if there's no limit on what we could spend, you know, we could do these things. But I think it's important to kind of look at the scales of what, at various costs, kind of what you can get and what type of people income-wise and so forth are benefited by different proposals. So we're going to have this proposal, which is about $4 million, to represent Juergens' proposal, which is everything, which is over $400 million in 1 year. I mean, so yes, some things are going to be possible, and you know, might be somewhere in between when you get to reality. So that's kind of what we're looking at, so we can kind of look at a scale of things. And Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you for allowing us to do that, and thank you, Representative Cantrell, for bringing this forward, because like you said in the beginning, this is scalable. We could add more in, but what's important is you're keeping that phase out too, so we're really targeting those that are the most at need, and we can kind of creep in and move that up as we have money. So thank you for the opportunity to look at this way of doing it.
All right. Any other members' questions? Is there anyone here in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 883? Seeing none, Representative Cantrell, any closing comments?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify before you today. And I hope that everybody has a great rest of your day.
Very good. Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 883 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Representative Cantrell, thank you so much. Next, we have House File 885, Representative Wasilewicz. And do we have, welcome, Representative Wasilewicz, do we have someone that would like to move House File 885? Representative Becker-Finn moves House File 885 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And there is a DE1 amendment that Representative Becker-Finn moves the DE1 amendment. Any discussion on that? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we have an explanation by the author of this amendment?
Representative Wasilick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I'm not 100% clear on exactly the change, but it has to do with the CPI, the measure of CPI that was used in the original drafting of the bill, and this is a slightly different CPI. I don't know if Sean wants to speak to that in more detail.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there's actually just a drafting error in the initial bill and how it's indexed for inflation. So I think that the bill as it's currently drafted is drafted to the Internal Revenue Code after TCJA, but we have not yet conformed to TCJA, and the bill does not conform to TCJA. So the DE just conforms to or makes the inflation adjustment language drafted to the old Internal Revenue Code.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Well, thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Any further discussion on the DE1 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted. So welcome, Representative Wasilick, if you would want to talk to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. This is also my first bill, so I'm glad to be here presenting today. As Representatives Claiborne and Cantrell noted, the Social Security taxes was a hot topic on the campaign trail, particularly with seniors in my community, in my district. And so I wanted to be able to respond to those concerns with this bill. And HF 885 modifies Minnesota's Social Security subtraction to allow taxpayer to subtract the full amount of the taxpayer's taxable Social Security income, subject to an income-based phase-out, and that phase-out begins at $110,000 of AGI for married taxpayers filing joint returns, and $80,000 for single taxpayers, and that is reduced by 10% for each $1,000 increase in AGI above those amounts. So essentially, I think one of the things, along with offering some relief for seniors in the community, is this is an effort to kind of make things a little less complicated and a little less confusing, and to make sure that we're targeting the folks who need the help the most.
Mr. Williams, could you address the phase out and how that compares to the current law right now on this bill?
Mr. Chair and members, so under current law, that's the Social Security subtraction is phased out at $80,000 of provisional income for married couples filing jointly. So the bill before the committee would increase the phase out to $110,000, and it would shift the measure of income from provisional income to adjusted gross income.
Okay. Otherwise, Mr. Williams, this bill kind of up under those incomes is the full subtraction?
Mr. Chair, members, yes.
Okay. So I think the next bill will be the full subtraction with no income phase out. So just a comparison again for members to get an idea of what the cost is. So this would be the full subtraction kind of up to a certain amount and then phases out. So and let's take a look at the revenue note, because the revenue estimate, and that would be or do we have a change here? Yes. Okay. So that for 2021, that'd be $191 million on that one. So, member questions? If not, anyone from the audience would care to testify for or against House File 885 as amended? See no one. Representative Wasilick, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present the bill. Look forward to seeing it included in the omnibus bill so that we can find some relief for seniors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So Representative Becker Finn renews her motion to lay over House File 885 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. All right, Representative Juergens. Mm-hmm. Would anyone care to move House File 56?
So moved.
Representative baby and moves House File 56 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And we do have an A1 amendment. Representative Fabian, would you also like to move the A1 amendment?
In honor of Valentine's Day, yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Thank you very much. That was that was sweet. Yeah. So we have an amendment. We have
today
a motion to move the A1 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Juergens, welcome, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davids, nobody instructed me not to bring any treats today. I actually thought I was being a rebel by not bringing treats today. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair.
Just fair warning, any bill that you would grant the out of your generosity and kind heart would allow me to hear, I'm bringing treats.
Very good. Thank you so much. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we've had some interesting weather here in the state of Minnesota recently, and we embrace that. We think that it builds character, and we're proud of that. And Minnesota was actually, on tiphero.com, was ranked number one for worst weather in the country, and I think that we're proud of that. There's another list that we are number one at that I don't think we should be very proud at. Kiplinger's magazine has ranked Minnesota as the least tax-friendly state for seniors. We've heard some other bills today of chipping away at the Social Security income. There's a saying, what's the best way to eat an elephant, and it's one bite at a time. I'm not here to take one bite at a time. I think that we just need to do what's right and get rid of it altogether. So my bill eliminates state income taxes on all Social Security benefits. I think it's time that we do the right thing for the seniors in Minnesota. We all just came through a season where we knocked down a lot of doors and talked to a lot of our constituents. And one of the things that I heard time and time again, and I'm sure many of you did as well, is when are we going to get rid of Social Security taxes on or state income taxes on Social Security benefits across the board? I went to one neighborhood. It was right around neighborhood happy hour. There's about eight people sitting in one garage. I thought, this is great. I can talk to several people at one time. And after a bit of a discussion, I learned that every single one of them lives in Florida for 7 months out of the year. They don't even vote in Minnesota. And perhaps the weather is one of the reasons. But they did tell me that the other reason was Minnesota is just too high taxed. So in some of the other bills today, we heard terms like thresholds and subtractions, provisional incomes and phase outs. Let's just keep it simple. Cantrell, or Representative Cantrell and Wozlawick, they did a great job of explaining their bills. But outside of this very esteemed group in here, I bet most of us have trouble explaining to our constituents exactly how this the phase out and the thresholds and the subtractions work. So let's just keep it simple. Let's just do away with it all together. And I would appreciate your support. I'll answer any questions that I'm able.
Thank you so much. Any questions from members on House File 56? Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a bit troubled by a letter from the AARP where they support the DFL Social Security bills, but they don't support the Republican Social Security bill, and it does more for seniors than all the other bills combined. So just take note of that the AARP does not support getting rid of Social Security taxes on all Minnesotans, and that's a bit troubling to me and confusing, and I'm sure after what I just said, I'll have someone in my office shortly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the letter from the AARP, I don't think that they really care about the party of the who's bringing forward the bills. I mean, while we certainly recognize that a total phase out of Social Security taxes may be appealing as envisioned in House File 56, it would also be very costly. And so there's a recognition, this bill is $382.6 million in just 1 year. And so I think, it doesn't so much have to do with the party so much as the dollar amount. And the ability for us to have the state to have the ability to provide other services to our seniors as well.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
I think my point was just made by the comments, but I would only suggest that people read the entire AARP letter. They'll get a pretty good understanding of where they come at it from. They're also concerned about other services that are provided to our senior citizens, and they make that very clear in the letter.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Representative Juergens.
And I hadn't had the opportunity to read the letter, so I stole Representative David so I could take a look at it. I did have a conversation with representatives from AARP the other day and was told, similar to what's in the letter, they are in favor of that. They just don't think we can afford it. And so that I believe, is their stance.
Yeah, thank you. And I do think, you know, if everyone kind of steps back on this, you know, you're looking at the big picture on things. And again, I think if we had just unlimited amount of dollars and resources, you know, we could do a lot of things we would want to do. But the reality is we don't have those unlimited resources. So we have to kind of look at those areas that are going to provide the most targeted benefits to the folks who need it the most. So I think that's important. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did read the letter. I read every word of it. I studied for 3 to 4, maybe 5 hours last night on this information here. And I looked at the Wasilik. We can't afford that one either. So where do they draw the line here? They should be supporting what's best for seniors, and the Juergens bill is the best. Now, can we afford it? No. Can we afford the Wasilik? What's that say? That one. We can't afford that either. So I don't know who's drawing the distinction. Eventually, Mr. Chairman, you will be. But we're not going to be doing 885. We're not going to be doing the Juergens bill. The money's not there. And so I was just confused by when they had the chance to do the best for seniors, they didn't do it.
So we got a Representative Cantrell bill, Representative Wasilik bill, and a Representative Juergens bill. And I think we heard today very clearly from all three authors of the bills that this is something they have heard. They're very concerned about it, and they're each taking approaches that they think works best into not only providing tax benefits for seniors, but also making sure we preserve resources for health care and other areas that benefit seniors too. So there's always a balance on both sides of the ledger. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think it's important to note that I think we all recognize that we are a high-tax state. And there was some debate whether or not people move in and out of the state based upon high taxes. According to the Cato Institute, and I think we all can agree that's a pretty predominant and trustworthy, respected institution, there is vast evidence of people that do migrate out of high-tax states and migrate into low-tax states. So out of their research in 2016, 20 of the 25 highest states in the nation, 24 of them had a net out-migration. And guess where they went? To higher tax states? No. They went to lower tax states. Of the 25 lowest tax states, 17 had a net in-migration. Now, that's not Representative McDonald saying it. That's the Cato Institute saying that. And kind of have a good idea that they're pretty esteemed and trustworthy. So we can all either agree that people don't move to lower tax state because of high tax state, or trust the data that's in front of us. And it's, the data really is evident with Representative Juergens and the other representatives who recognize that we are a high tax state. Senior citizens probably don't have the luxury of being able to pick up and move, but many do, and the evidence is there.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, thank you for Representative Juergens for bringing this other option to the table. I'm glad that we're talking about this. I know we're going to all come from different points of view on this. That's why it's sometimes easier to defer to people that have lived a little longer. I like hearing from AARP. I'm going to be getting my AARP card pretty soon here myself. But I think they're really practical. And I think they understand that we need to look at the whole picture. They've lived long enough, we've lived long enough to know we have to look at the whole picture. Nobody's kidding themselves here. We're having an ideological fight, and that's fine. Maybe it's because we didn't get the donuts this morning. Who knows? But I do want to lift up a voice from some of the constituents I've heard from. Surprisingly, Social Security taxes weren't a huge thing in my district when I knocked on 13,000 doors, but I did have a constituent who has since unfortunately moved just to the east to the another city, which is an even higher taxed city. But they, for when we were having this discussion in 2017, every week he'd send me an email saying, please don't completely phase out taxes on Social Security for everybody because we can afford to pay what we're paying. You need to be practical. And he was dogged. He would send me emails, talk to me saying, you know, it doesn't make sense to do this for everybody. We really need to be doing this for, and Representative Liz Lagarde comes to the rescue. We need to be practical about this and look at everybody and everybody's needs. So while I appreciate the discussion we're having here, I hope it remains respectful. Thank you.
Representative Gomez.
Oh, I wasn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to bring us back to a little bit of a reality here in regards to what we can afford and what we can't afford.
Yeah.
The reality is we can afford anything we choose to. It may be at the cost of something else, but to arbitrarily say the bill is bad because we can't afford it is probably not the proper way for us to deal with them. I've been told many times in taxes we don't really have any rules here, so we can do what we want to, but just remember that when we put things into the mix, we certainly have the ability to afford this if we want. It may come at the cost of something else. So I just don't want us to get into the idea that just because we think something is larger that we wouldn't present the bill or don't hear it or that we can't afford it. So I think that rhetoric probably isn't as effective as just saying, well, it's a large bill. Well, we'll see if there are dollars available, how we want to prioritize those things, et cetera. So just kind of a caution for our pre-assumptions of things.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Representative Petersburg. And that's exactly why we're hearing these three bills that have varying levels of scale all the way to the bill that, you know, would provide the entire benefit. So that's exactly why we're doing it, so we can have this good debate this morning. Anyone else? No, I'm sorry. Yes, Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel better now. And after having knocked on 13,500 doors, I was in one of the last speeches, somebody said we need to keep it respectful. I would like to know if there's been any time during the day where something was not respectful, just if the chair could answer that.
Representative Davids, I have not seen any. It's been nothing but respect today, and I think Representative Joaquin, would you like to?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I was saying, yeah, I was hoping in the future we could continue to keep the respect we're having right now. So I'm sorry if anything was misconstrued.
Very good. Any other comments from members? Representative Gomez.
Sorry, I changed my mind. I did just want to, Mr. Chair, thank you. I did just want to point out that, you know, the Cato Institute is funded by the Koch brothers. It's not a, you know, it's, I mean, you can, I think that, mm-hmm. that yesterday we had Representative McDonald kind of acknowledged in his comments to Representative Schultz that there are kind of, you know, I think what she said was, like, we're going to have competing sets of data. So I just want to acknowledge that I don't think the Cato Institute is not our nonpartisan research arm. It is not a nonpartisan source, just since that was put out there. Just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Further comments? Representative McDonald, your name was used.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Representative Gomez. Tradition is you get to respond. There you go.
Even after 8 years, I don't know well enough to call another member's name. But it's a good thing to happen that we can have the debate. So, yes, that said, perhaps it's funded by the group. It doesn't make them bad, all right?
I didn't see that.
But my empirical evidence is my little window, like I said yesterday, in the little town of Delano in the county of Wright, where I have a handful of folks that are leaving and have left. And that's just Delano and Wright County. We're all farmland there. So that's the evidence I need as I talk to my folks and listen to why they're leaving. And I don't blame them. And actually, after driving in this traffic as long as I can, my wife and I maybe think when my son is graduated that we'll move to Florida, where all her family has migrated. But we'll pray on that as time goes on. And then lastly, what was the other comment? Oh, Social Security. Yes,
fundamentally, philosophically, I think it really is an unfair and a really rotten way to tax people after they pay all their lives and put money into Social Security, and then when they get an age they can take it, finally accept it, that we tax that. I just think that that's a philosophically unfair, for lack of a better word.
Naughty.
After taxing, after they pay in it all their life, finally get to take it back. All of us will be in the same boat. Hopefully, God willing, it'll be there when we retire. And then it's taxed. That's just not fair. That's not right.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think it's we need to be careful which sources we use for information. So the Cato Institute does definitely have a certain agenda, and it can be easy to only present part of the story, part of the picture with data. And so we really want to use more reliable, nonpartisan sources. But I don't think we're going to convince each other here in this committee about any ideological differences. I do want to say that I think a lot of people do move to the South, and there could be a correlation between low tax states and weather. So I think people move for many different reasons. And what the surveys I've seen, the information I've seen, taxes is not in the top tier of those reasons why they move. So I don't think we want to blame our tax state. But I do want to say, I don't know if these provisions were in the tax bill from last session when Republicans were controlling the tax bill. And I think that if we're going to bring forward these bills that cost a lot of money, $450 million, we need to identify where we're going to reduce our spending.
No.
Where are we going to find those savings? And Chair Davids maybe has some ideas that he can share with us.
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, unless something has changed drastically, that's not the point of this committee. The point of this committee is to hear bills, lots of bills. We'll hear $20 billion worth of spending in here. It's not the, at this point in the game, it's not the job of this committee to determine what's spent where. I want to hear ideas, good and bad, in between. And as far as hearing data, I always use good, solid data that favors my position, and if it's against my position, I discredit it totally.
And members, did you know that 78.3% of all statistics are made up on the spot?
That was 93.
Thank you. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the point about data, I was wondering if, because, you know, obviously I'm new to this committee and to this subject, and I've heard some different ideas about where we stand in terms of the overall tax burden that our residents face. And so I wondered if, you know, and we got a, when we were hearing testimony yesterday, one of the testifiers provided us with a ranking of our marginal tax rates in respect to other states. And so I'm wondering if, just as sort of a piece of reference document, if House Research could give us a picture of where our effective tax rate sits in terms of the other states in the U.S. so that we can just have a picture of what the actual impact is on folks instead of focusing in very narrowly on the rates when the taxation picture is actually something larger, just because it feels like we keep having these like, oh, we're a middle tax state. Oh, no, we're like a super high tax state. And it would be nice if we had some nonpartisan research to kind of just give us some context for that.
Very good. We'll see if House Research can do that. So thank you so much. Any other Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we're talking about facts and figures, I'm wondering if nonpartisan research could tell us how many other states still tax Social Security income.
Mr. Williams, you happen to have that with you? If sure. not, we can Mr. look Chair. At that another day.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I think I have that.
Mr. Chair.
Minutes to look it up.
Thank you.
Maybe Representative Juergens has
The bill author has that information.
Okay, Representative Juergens, I'm not surprised you are ready for that information. So, Representative Juergens.
37 states plus the District of Columbia do not have state income taxes on Social Security benefits. We're one of 13. And I believe there might be a couple of other states that are taking a look at doing away with it, but that's the research that I have. That's what I uncovered.
Very good. I think Representative Schultz, were you back? And then back to Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to that request of Mr. Williams, if we not just look at the effective tax rate, but also look at any fees, because many states have don't call them taxes, but they call them fees. So really exposure to fees as well as taxes.
Members, I want House Research staff working on a tax bill ultimately. So, but we'll see if we can get that information. Okay. Any other comments from members? And Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the tax incidence study gives us some of this information, does it not? Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, I think it does show, for Minnesota purposes, effective rates at different income levels, but it doesn't necessarily have some of the state-by-state comparisons. So.
Okay, we do have one testifier who's asked to speak. Ms. Madden? And then if anyone else would like to, please be ready. So, please state your name for the committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kind of surprised to be the only testifier today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Please state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nan Madden, Director of the Minnesota Budget Project.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to testify today with some concerns about the bills you have before you to significantly expand the state's income tax exemption for Social Security income. As you've heard, Minnesota already takes a targeted approach to taxation of Social Security benefits. For the lowest income seniors, all of their Social Security benefits are exempt. For many other seniors, half or more of their Social Security is exempt, and all seniors have some of their Social Security exempt. And Minnesota did take steps in 2017 to provide additional Social Security exemption focused on middle-income seniors. The concerns we have with some of the bills before you today include the high cost of the bills, which, as has already been mentioned, can crowd out other priorities and put services that seniors count on at risk. And they are not well targeted. They do not benefit the most struggling seniors and do provide large tax cuts to higher income seniors. So as I mentioned, concerns with the cost. House File 56 fiscal impact in the next biennium is nearly $800 million, and that grows in the next biennium. Also concerned with the size of House File 885. And the cost of any of these provisions will continue to grow over time as more seniors as seniors become a larger share of our population. So we would be reducing the amount of resources available at the same time that we will have more and more seniors needing services, whether those be community-based services that allow seniors to stay in their homes and communities, transit to get to the doctor or to the store, or high-quality nursing home care. So I think if we think about the demographics and the trajectory of these bills, I think we set ourselves up for some challenges in the future. I think ultimately the most struggling seniors would be the ones that are hardest hit because they don't see any benefit from the tax exemption, yet they would feel the most impact from any cutbacks on services. You know, Minnesota already takes a targeted approach to Social Security. Some of these bills would also provide exemptions at higher income levels, and I'm not sure what the policy rationale at these higher income levels being over 65 or receiving Social Security isn't an indicator of hardship. So I just am wondering a little bit about why have that carve out that's not available to other people at those income levels. Finally, I'm a little hesitant to wade into the area of academic research, but I will caution you again from overestimating the influence on state tax policy on people's decisions to move. The academic research that looked at a 30-year period on tax policies and looked at the implications for seniors and where they lived found that taxes aren't a strong driver. Not saying it never happens, but patterns of migration by seniors in the U.S. have been fairly steady over time, even as state tax policies regarding seniors have changed quite a bit and vary a lot from state to state. So if taxes were a driver, you would think you'd see more of a of an impact and more variation, but it's been pretty steady over time. To conclude, I just would mention, that Minnesota already in 2017 took some efforts to be more targeted, to focus on the seniors most in need, and to watch for the fiscal impact. That's the approach I would encourage you to continue to take.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Madden? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Madden, can you share that study with me, please?
Sure. Representative Fabian, Mr. Chair. There's a researcher at the University of New Hampshire, I believe, who's done a great deal of work on this, and I'll send some of those studies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Madden? Not? Thank you so much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Please come forward, sir. And if you would, please state your name and then begin with your testimony. Welcome.
Chairman Marquardt, Scott Halstead, I'm with the Minnesota Federation of NARF, the Federal Employees and Retirees. My wife is a para retiree, and for about the past 5 years, I have gone in and looked at para data on where people live. And in 2016, there was 96,325 para retirees in Minnesota. 2017, that went to 99,554. So it went up 3,229 people. Para retirees that live in other states, 11,198 in 2016, 11,852 in 2017, an increase of 654. So like over 20% increase in retirees living in other states. As I said, I've tracked this for years. In 2016, 10.4% of para retirees lived out of the state. In 2017, 10.64% lived out of state. And that has kept increasing throughout the 5 years I've been tracking it. Well, where do these people go? Gee, they go to warmer climate? Yes. But the state with the most is Wisconsin. So Wisconsin has 2,353 para retirees living there in 2017. I didn't get 2018 data, but that went up from 2,225. The top seven states are Wisconsin, Florida, Arizona, Texas, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Iowa. So four out of the top seven states are our neighbors. They didn't go there for the climate. I think it's pretty simple that some people are going for saving dollars. Now, some of those people might live right along the border and have people or living in Iowa or whatever, and had a spouse working in Minnesota or whatever. But it would be interesting to see what the teachers and the state employees and see what that looks like, because I think that might give you some better numbers than you're getting from the state demographer.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So it's, this is a high-quality state. We do have to pay for the wonderful benefits in this state. So we support that, but we also need to think about people that are leaving the state. Is there some tweaks that we could do to keep some of them? You're not going to keep somebody from Florida going down there to play golf in the wintertime or whatever in the warmth. But and the people with the highest income of para people are those going to Florida, et cetera. The ones that go to Wisconsin and other states have lower para pensions.
Very good. Mr. Halstead, thank you so much for taking the time to testify today. Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 56 as amended? Seeing none, members, any other comments from members? If not, Representative Juergens, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I started out my conversation today talking about the weather, and we embrace that. We embrace the fact that we're number one on the states with the worst weather. I talked to Representative Fabian over the weekend. He was home in Roseau. I said, it's 13 below here. He said, well, it's 25 below here. I think I'm going to go snowmobiling today. So I think we should embrace that. We should own it and be proud of the fact that we're number one for worst weather. But I think that we need to do what we can to get off of the list of being the least tax-friendly state in the union for seniors. Just to reiterate the numbers, 37 states plus the District of Columbia do not tax Social Security. We're one of 13 states that currently does. We heard some discussion on how to pay for that, and really, as Representative David said, that's a different discussion. But back in May, Channel 9 had a report on $100 million worth of fraud in the child care assistance program. DHS hasn't implemented periodic data matching, which could be tens of millions of dollars. So there's half the nut right there without just off the top of my head. So it's doable. We can do it. And I think it's time that we need to do the right thing for the seniors in the state of Minnesota. And this, my bill, would benefit over 350,000 Minnesotans. That's the residents in your districts and mine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fabian renews his motion to lay over House File 56 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, I did go snowmobiling on Saturday, and we went to the races on Sunday.
Very good. You are dedicated. Any Representative Fabian, any hockey games that you have to report over the weekend? The
playoffs have started.
Very good.
Moorhead's got the number one seed in Section 8. Oh, man. Ooh. Roseau's too.
Okay. All right. Representative Sean.
Mr. Chair, so one of the cities that I represent is Woodbury, and so one of the high school, East Ridge High School, the girls' hockey is going to the state finals for the first time ever.
Very good.
Yeah, so congrats to those girls.
All right. We have a final bill up, House File 866. Representative Loeffler, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 866 to be considered and then laid over for possible inclusion in the tax bill.
Very good. Please proceed.
Well, thank you. Today, this bill deals with a group of retirees who sometimes are forgotten in this discussion and sometimes feel forgotten. Many people aren't aware that when Social Security began, it was not a requirement for government employees. At that time, many of them had their own pension systems, some didn't, but it was a choice that they could make as to whether or not they were going to join the Social Security system that was originally discussed for people who worked in the private sector. And so we have a variety of public employees in Minnesota who finished their career, oftentimes in first responder, police and fire situations, but also other public employment, as well as working for the federal government, who paid in out of their income into a pension. Sometimes they paid dramatically more. I believe Social Security, the employee contribution is 7.6%. I've heard of contributions over 9% from employees throughout their career to that pension. They just don't have the economies of scale that a nationwide program has. And so then they have retired, and their only source of income is that public pension. They do not get Social Security. Now, some of these are legacy programs. Many government pension programs changed 2-3 decades ago to be coordinated with Social Security, so many of these are phasing out over time. But for the retirees who are totally dependent on non-Social Security retirement income, they too would like to have their situation considered as we look at relieving or adjusting the tax burden on people who have retired who are Minnesota residents. And so the bill before you parallels the situation that we've been discussing in current Minnesota law in terms of how we treat Social Security retirement benefits, allowing the first $25,000 not to be taxed and then having the two tiers And so it's this bill is, like the others presented in front of you or earlier today, it is scalable. So it can be adjusted based on our fiscal realities. But I think it's important for us to look at whether or not all people who are dependent on retirement income, who were not given the choice of going into Social Security, that was an employer choice, should be treated the same. And I have a couple of witnesses who'd like to share their circumstances, if you'd entertain them now, or I could answer some questions.
We will. Yes, why don't you have them come down, and if, while you mention that, if you look at the bill summary on House Bill 866, one of the groups that it would be under something like this would be the legislators' retirement plan. And it would be my intent, if this ever moved forward, that that part would not be included in the benefits. I know that might hurt your chances here at this table, possibly, but that part would.
And Mr. Chair,
just for full disclosure, I want folks to know that that it would be one of them, and one that I would not support of putting as a benefit in this plan.
And for members of the public who may be watching, you should know that that is a closed plan. I think it was legislators last elected in 1996. Yes. There's a few still serving, and we appreciate their continued service. But if you are elected after 1996, you were not made a member of a public employee defined benefit pension plan.
So it would not impact a lot of us.
So, Mr. Chair, I was the first legislator under that new plan.
That's really bad.
Okay, so let's move back a second. So, Representative Loeffler, what you're saying is that this bill would not impact those elected after 1996. Is that what you're saying, Representative?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Oh, Representative Davidson and Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, okay. First treats and now our pensions. It's been a rough day. It's good it's towards the end of the meeting because, you know, three strikes and you're out. But I really like this bill. This is really a good bill, House File 866. And I'd like to ask Representative Loeffler if I could be a co-author of the room.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, there is definitely room, and I invite anyone on the committee to join me in stepping up for people who have devoted their careers to public service and who have not had the benefit of Social Security in planning for their retirement.
And it does include the State Patrol.
It does include the State Patrol. It does include many, as I said, first responders, and we have some testifiers I think can give you some personal experiences from them and the members of their organization. And first, I'd like to invite up.
Just a couple more questions here, and we'll get Representative Davids and Representative Carlson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as Chair Loeffler said, this bill is scalable, and I was thinking about amending it to remove everything other than legislators' retirement plan. But we'll talk about that later.
Sounds good. Representative Carlson, are you good?
Chairman, I don't disagree with you as a city legislator that was elected prior to. However, what you have to also keep in mind is that there are a lot of retired legislators that are no longer sitting in this body that were serving back years ago that would be impacted. So I'm not disagreeing with you in the concept of current legislators, quite frankly, but I think we also have to consider those that are already retired and made a choice back years ago to go with the retirement plan that would be covered by this particular bill. You know, basically, what I think we're talking about here is way back when, if you were under an approved plan, you did not come under Social Security. Later, they combined some of those, and there were certain choices that were made. But keep in mind, federal employees, I'm not totally sure where railroad retirement fits in that. It's equivalent to Social Security. It's a little better plan than Social Security. I'm not sure how that would be covered. But there are a variety of so-called approved plans that were not put under Social Security, including some of the teacher retirement plans. I suspect we had testimony from the gentleman about PDRA, that group of employees. So it's kind of a generational thing. If you were under one of those approved plans, then you were not under your Social Security. So I think that's the point of this bill, is to cover those that were under other kinds of claims.
Yeah. Very good. Representative Loeffler, if you'd have your testifiers,
yes,
please come forward.
Well, I'd like to welcome Mr. Chris Parsons on behalf of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. While he's coming up, I'll just tell you that I've gotten a note from Brian Rice, who was going to speak in support of the bill on behalf of the Minnesota Police Fraternal Association, and we are running into a situation that we may run into more often, which is he is caught up in the Senate Tax Committee, which meets at the exact same time.
Thank you. Please state your name for the committee.
My name is Chris Parsons. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters.
Please proceed and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to be here today to testify. I want to thank Representative Loeffler for her bill. And before I begin, I just wanted to say that I had the pleasure of being a constituent of Representative Loeffler for many years, and not so recently moved away out of her district. And
we're hoping to get him back.
And my life has never been the same. I'm here to testify in favor of this bill. We are in favor of tax relief for hardworking Minnesotans, as well as good sound fiscal policy. And as you debate these tax provisions relating to Social Security, please don't forget about the hardworking men and women and retirees that spend a career keeping Minnesotans safe. Some things that I'd like you to consider as you're considering these provisions are that career firefighters in Minnesota are not in Social Security. Many of us do qualify. We've qualified through prior past employment or our secondary employment for those that have it. However, the Social Security windfall provision greatly reduces any benefit that we would see upon reaching age 65. Also, normal retirement age for firefighters is 55, and Medicare does not kick in until 65. So when you retire, for those that retire at 65, some things blank off, and one of those benefits that blank off would be your employer-paid health insurance. So folks that retire at 55 have quite the gap of having to pay the full freight for their family's health insurance until they reach age 65. When we were making changes to our pension system, the bill including the bill that was passed last year with the support of all the members in this room, or most of the members in this room, one of the biggest hit groups were the retirees. They had their COLAs capped at 1%. One of the things that blinks off when you retire is you're not getting the raise increases that you would have gotten if you were still working. With the COLAs capped at 1%, that means that retirees each and every year are falling further and further behind the cost of the increased cost of living. It does not match up with the consumer price index. Purchasing power is reduced year after year. So this bill would provide tax relief to folks that need it the most, and I hope that the committee will see fit to pass this legislation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Parsons. Is there anyone else would like to testify? Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Mr. Halstead from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees has indicated he'd like to speak as well.
Mr. Halstead, welcome again, but if you would please state your name again for the record.
Thank you. I'm Scott Halstead. Mr. Chair, I'm Vice President of Legislation for the Minnesota Federation of NARF. I'd like to thank Representative Loeffler, Gomez, and Carlson here in this committee that sponsored this bill. And in the Senate, Gary Dedzick, Sandy Pappas, and Ann Rust are the authors there. The Civil Service Retirement System, which I was a part of, has been in existence since 1921 and got phased out in 1987 with a new system called FERS. The CSRS retirement system did not include Social Security. Some people got Social Security by working other jobs or previous employment or after employment with outside the government. I paid in 7% since 1977 to 2004 towards that, and I had some military service, and I had to pay that back to get my years of retirement, so 30 years at 7% income going towards retirement plan. But the first plan took place there in 1987, and so all new employees after 1987 are in the FERS system. They get Social Security plus other smaller pensions and a 401k type plan called Thrift Savings. So this is going to be something that for federal retirees on CSRS, there's going to be a declining number. So the number that it costs the state is going to decline and probably go away about 20, 40, 45 totally period for those people. Well, how many people are there in Minnesota that are under retirement here? And there's around 31,000 federal retirees in the state of Minnesota. The Office of Personnel Management doesn't provide very good numbers to people of what categories, how much do they make. They used to, but they keep giving you less information. I recall about $28,000 was the average annuity back a couple of years ago. And it probably hasn't changed very much. How many people are under CSRS? Boy, that's a hard guess. Again, probably 85 to 90% of those people that are currently retired are under CSRS. And so if you've used an average of 28,000, you could kind of come up with a guesstimate of cost for those particular people. I would say the average age in Minnesota of federal retirees under CSRS is probably 78 to 82, somewhere in that range. So they're pretty senior people. 18 states exempt federal pensions from state taxes totally. There's many, many other states that exempt a portion, but probably 40 some states and do it either total exemption or a portion exemption, and there's all different kinds of rules for that. So Minnesota has not exempted federal pension income since the 1980s. So it's we've paid in a lot of money compared to the Social Security benefits during these years. It probably approaches $1 billion that federal retirees that have remained in Minnesota are paying. So we support this bill. We appreciate everyone on the committee signing up to be co-sponsors, and we look forward to passing this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Halstead, thank you for your testimony and for your military service.
Yep.
Thank you. Any, Representative Loffler, do you have any further testifiers?
Mr. Chair, no, I have no further testifiers, and I appreciate the committee's consideration.
I will ask, before you give close and members' questions, is there anything for anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 866? Seeing none, members, any other questions for Representative Loffler before she closes? All right. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the time of adjournment has arrived, and I would like to just say that I really appreciate us considering treating all retirees who are struggling to make afford the basics in life and in an equitable way as we move forward. We've seen a lot of options today, and I hope that as we debate this, we don't forget that there's people who are not included in Social Security and had no choice about that.
Well, and thank you. And this has been very good debate today in talking about, you know, benefits and retirees and that taxation, because we know there's a lot of retirees on fixed incomes. So any benefit we can provide is valuable. So would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 866 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Very good. Thank you so much. Members, thank you for your work and discussion this week, and have a wonderful weekend coming up, and hopefully, well, I think it's going to get colder now again, but have a nice weekend. We're adjourned.